From Raleigh, North Carolina, it's Westworld with Jay, Jack, and Mike, a podcast dedicated to HBO's Westworld. This week, we'll discuss episode 2 of season 2, Reunion. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. And welcome to Westworld with Jay, Jack, and Mike. My name is Jay.
My name is Mike.
And I'm a cheeky little.
And welcome to the show. How's it going, gentlemen?
That's two episodes in, Jack. You're going to need to explain what that meant. I was trying to think of if this is a pop culture reference, if this is a line that I missed, if this is alluding to someone's butt showing. I'm not sure.
It's a
line you missed, and it has more to the line, but I figured I better not say
see you next Tuesday. Drop.
Oh, yeah. Now, I think it's because I missed that very descriptive third word from your phrasing. Now it's all coming back.
If you're going hunting, you know, be it. So.
Yes. Old Papa Delos.
I love when the British say cheeky. I don't know why.
He sounded more Australian than British.
I was going to say, like, oh, can we? I don't want to jump to the place, you know, Mr. Delos's accent game right now, but. Very, like, mixture of all things United Kingdom. Basically all, like, English-speaking countries into one man.
Well, I was going to look up the actor because he's in something. And it was bugging me the whole time.
Colleen knew because she was like, oh, my God, oh. He might be Good Wife or something. If the way her reaction was, I'm going to guess Good Wife. Or The Good Fight,
I only watch, like, 3 or 4 episodes a year on The Good Wife, so.
Maybe that was one of the 3 or 4 episodes.
But it was actually being Australian. There might be like a Rupert Murdoch kind of thing, maybe.
That could be it. Yeah,
that he's kind of playing too. I mean, Dale.
I don't know, but this is also being betrayed as like Rupert Murdoch isn't that bad, but his son-in-law, he's the one that's really telling him to do all these decisions.
Exactly.
But you know, an episode with a lot. If the first episode had timeline jumping, this one had, I guess, more traditional flashbacky and type of time jumping, but it was a bit more. It crossed a lot of time, it all places somewhere though. Like I feel like I have a grasp on where it all landed.
I thought I did, and then I confused myself halfway through the episode again.
As we go through the recap, I'll try and place it, and Jack and Mike, if you have, you know, any other input to kind of place it. But I feel like it all fits in place with either before the William timeline of season one, after the original William Dolores timeline of season one, and then the 2 weeks before. Bernard's timeline from episode one. And that's where everything seems to be in.
Yeah, that's where I placed it as well. It seemed like those are sort of the three time periods that took place in. The William stuff was a little confusing. I think Logan is sort of our constant there, where you see his differing attitudes. That's sort of a sign where the last time we saw him, he was naked on a horse being, you know, completely embarrassed, especially considering what we might know now about the purpose of Westworld. It probably burns even more than the chafing he experienced from riding a horse naked. But I'm excited to talk about this one. This might be, maybe this is Mike's branded hot take, wild theory, jerky turkey, what have you. I think I like this episode better than the first one.
I think agree.
There was a lot more revelatory stuff going on. Maybe I was happier to see, you know, the Logan and the William of it all, to get more of these ensemble characters involved, to flesh out some of the mythos and some of this really juicy mystery as well, with this idea of the weapon, which is glory, which is the valley beyond, all the names combined. So I'm really excited to talk about this one in general.
Yeah, exactly.
And all its splendor.
And there's a rule of thumb, I think, in television, or at least this golden era of television. If you add a Giancarlo Esposito, it's going to take it to the next level. And I think this episode had that touch of Giancarlo Esposito, which was like a cool surprise.
I had no idea he was going to be in it. In fact, when he first heard the voice, I go, who is that? I know that voice.
Yeah, I recognize the accent because I'm like, oh, that sound. It's like this guy's trying to do a bad Giancarlo Esposito impression. But no, it turns out that was Giancarlo Esposito doing a bad Giancarlo Esposito impression. But it was super fun to see him. Super weird. I know I've seen him in other stuff. You know, he played like the Magic Mirror-esque role in Once Upon a Time. But he's definitely one of those actors where now you can't not associate him with that role. So, I mean, I'm glad, though, I mean, when he engaged in a face-off with the Man in Black, I was thinking, okay, this can go better than the last face-off he encountered, though it's probably not. Seems like same result at the end of the day, not to spoil anything.
I do get it, face-off.
Nice illusions there, nice illusions. But yeah, so excited to talk about this episode, a lot to dig into. We also have some listener feedback, and given Jack's initial comments about this episode, I don't know if it's going to be a great crackpot theory, but Jack will have a crackpot theory to close out the show. Jack,
hold on a second. They're all gold. It's just some.
All fool's gold, Jack. Yeah, you're panning in a riverbed.
Some are just worth are bigger nuggets than the other one. I mean, you know.
Oh man. So. So, but before we get into any of that fun times, I want to thank people that make the show possible. Our patrons over at patreon.com/JayandJack. All of the Jay and Jack podcasts are listener supported, and we want to thank people that make that show possible. If you'd like to become a patron, go to jayandjack.com and click on the Become a Patron link today. All right, let's jump into this recap, fellas. What do you say?
Do it.
All right. We have a cold open. It's kind of the same chord as the title sequence, but it actually kind of smacks of Chopin, I felt, which I didn't know for sure. It sounded Chopin-esque. Kind of sounded like a fantasy, impromptu fantasy. But it did also kind of, Chopin was referenced later on by old Papa Dalo, so maybe it was. But it's Dolores at the piano, and she wakes up in a flashback with Arnold in the real world. Dolores is in awe, and she has this phrase, "Have you ever seen anything with such splendor?" Arnold says, "After a while, it doesn't look like anything at all," which I thought was a neat little call out. Mm-hmm. Robert Ford, a young Robert Ford, even they didn't probably have enough budget
to stand in.
Yeah,
from the legs, a perfect leg model for Anthony Hopkins.
So it sounds like his voice. Like, so I haven't really dug into the credits. Is he actually doing this voice acting, or are they getting a sound alike for Anthony Hopkins?
I didn't think it sounded. It kind of sounded like him, but I
this is the second time we've had his voice.
I was going to look it up also, and I forgot to do it. But
I mean, all you would need to do is just call in like a Skype call, not unlike what we're doing here, and just sort of record those couple lines, right? I think one of the reasons why is they wanted to avoid doing the young Ford CGI that they did last season, mm-hmm. which it was good for storytelling purposes, but it still looks so weird. So I'm glad that they sort of strayed away from that and more so hinted towards it. But it was also good to see him there, and I guess it sort of answers our question of like, how is Ford going to be involved in the flashbacks? We're not seeing the end of Tony Hopkins talking on this show.
Yeah.
Whoa, Tony,
Mike's real close. Mike's real close with him.
Jeez. Well, why don't you get him on this show?
He was hot back in season one. Now we don't know what info he has.
Yeah, that's true.
That's true.
Plus, I don't know.
We'll bring on his leg model. He probably has more info. Since he's actually on set this season.
Let's get fake Tony.
Oh man,
phony Tony. Let's do it.
He comes in asking if Dolores is ready. Arnold says she isn't. Robert says, "You know, I thought this was kind of cute. This little thing, you know, the fascination you had with her, but you'll have to let go at some point." Arnold then takes her to his unfinished home in the city. Do we know what city this is? I'm not a Skyline expert. It seems a future city of some sort.
So from what I have read online, I believe that I think there's an advertisement for Station 47, which I believe is a prominent landmark in China. Okay. So again, this is another coin in the jar of the theory of this Westworld is taking someplace near China, because Arnold's going to say later on, like, hey, I have this shanty so my family can stay with me while I'm working close to the park. So you'd have to assume, even though at this point they're sort of scouting out locations.
Yep.
I guess we're sort of zeroing in on a set of coordinates right now.
Yep. Definitely more kernels of knowledge for us to go with.
Or generals.
Nicely done. So he takes her to the unfinished home in the city, shows her his room for Charlie, and she says, "You've told me a lot about Charlie. I'd like to meet him someday." And then Arnold referenced, "You and Charlie have a lot in common, you know. You see it so clearly, the beauty of it, the possibility of it." And, you know, she talks about maybe they don't have the courage to see it. A new light can be just as scary as the dark. And then Arnold kind of has this line about they're just not worthy of it. And then she repeats her line about splendor, kind of bringing Arnold back to reality. Like, they're not quite there. And says, "We have to go back." And she says, "Will you bring me back? I'd like to see it again." And Arnold says, "Of course, I promise." I feel like he may have broke that promise. That might be the way she was looking at the way the flashback went. It's like she, maybe the end of this season, will she be back to having that view of that city? Is something that I was getting a sense or a feel for. We go to the opening titles. So we haven't had many cold opens in this show, have we? So that it's definitely interesting little play there.
I wonder if it's because it takes place in such a different timeline, because I feel like we've only had events really occurring inside the park. I'm trying to remember. This is probably the first time we really jump to outside the park with these characters, so they probably really wanted to set the scene. Though, to your point, we still start with sort of echoes of it, with, you know, the piano song from the opening playing in the background before it comes back in full. But, yeah, I mean, you brought up all the really nuggety lines between Arnold and Dolores. I'm happy that we're seeing more of Arnold in here as well, because we've obviously seen him through the reveries that Dolores is undergoing, but we didn't know too much about him. So it's interesting to sort of get his perspective on things. And I mean, maybe Arnold was sort of fulfilling his promise to Dolores in, you know, undergoing this whole self-consciousness thing so that she can eventually break her way out and be able to see the lights of splendor like he promised.
Yeah, and this flashback, whatever it is, puts us, this is probably the earliest chronological scene that we've had in the show, right? Or, no, we've had some where Dolores was first created. But in terms of Arnold's story or backstory, I think the earliest we've seen is like with Charlie almost dying, and this seems to be before his medical issues, or at least that's Bernard having those. So, I mean, who knows? But this seems like a pretty early scene if we're trying to put all of the scenes that we have seen in chronological order.
My first thought was it was a different world. It was a different – you have Westworld.
One of the different – yeah.
I thought it was one of the different park
cocktail
attractions.
Cocktail party world.
Well, it could
Mad Men world.
Well, who wouldn't want to be? Okay, you live in rich. You know, well, of course you're rich. The only way you can go there is you're rich. But I just was trying to think something. It was down the line. I said, oh, I get it. It's real world. But I'm not 100% convinced it's not one of the parks.
But let's be honest. Like, how many people like really enjoy going to like dinner parties? I mean, I feel like that would be one that you'd want to avoid. Like the park that you wouldn't want to go to.
Well, if you don't ever get invited to dinner parties, maybe this is for you. You know,
or since we talk later about the fact that, you know, they think that Westworld is a place where you can exercise your sins, but we're watching it the entire time. What if this is where people go to get punished? They have to attend these dinner parties, go through these awkward things that they don't want to. You have to go to your child's recital. You have to go to your friend's play that you said offhandedly you would, even though you didn't really want to go. Like, this is the true hell, people. Hell on earth.
Is there anything worse than social engagements that you didn't really want to go to?
As three people who are talking on a podcast on a Monday night about Westworld, I think that the answer is unequivocally no.
We then kind of go to 2 weeks before, right after. What's the easiest way to say it? It's 2 weeks before. I'm just going to say 2 weeks before. That puts it in context of what we've seen so far. We have the Jerk board member gets to Sector 19. So we kind of have the answer of why she let this guy run, because obviously Dolores and crew followed him to get to,
and he let him right to the what a jerk.
Classic move. Dolores and crew.
Was this the one that Angela let go? So now we know, I guess the purpose is that he'll be the stray. He'll be the one to sort of, he'll be the goat to lead them back to the herd, so to speak. And I also think I did not think, you know, we would be seeing Dolores in Westworld HQ in such a short amount of time. But, I mean, she broke that boundary pretty quickly, which I think is just symbolic as to this is... I will say overall in this episode, I think we're realizing the extent of Dolores' power, and by that I mean the limit, where she still... We thought that, oh, all the hosts are on her side now. No, she really only has about, like, 50 or 60 at this point. But it's interesting to sort of see her cross that physical and metaphoric boundary by now going in there and getting her own, like, Felix and Sylvester to play with, and this tech who has to follow them around haplessly before he probably gets slaughtered at some point.
Yeah,
but
go ahead, Jack, I'm sorry.
Why didn't the jerky board member, once he realized they'd follow him, keep running? why did you stop?
They obviously didn't, the tail they put on wasn't too close, so he would know that he was being followed, so.
Well, he knew they were coming. I mean, he just
assumed probably that someone was coming. But, you know, and the board member says, you have no idea what's out there. Dolores says she does. She's been there before. And then we have the same kind of runaway but classical piano version. Maybe Kanye eventually does, like, cabaret piano numbers in the future. His show on Vegas. We transition back to the past to Logan and William at a bar, and Logan Delos. So that's a new reveal, right? We didn't know that his last name was Delos, and the company is named after him, right?
How do we feel about that? Because, like,
it's a little too on the head.
Where you're like, oh, that makes sense, but at the same time, like, it doesn't feel like this is not Big's last name. Or Big's name being revealed. You know, like, it makes sense, but it's not as big of a revelation for me.
Yeah, it was a little, like, to me, it's just like too on the point. It's like in Jurassic Park, you have InGen is the company that's kind of in the background financing everything, and it wasn't like Jim InGen. So it seemed a little bit on the point, but whatever, it makes sense.
Alan Dinosaur Man. I don't know, I might be spoiling a name for a character in the new Jurassic World movie, considering how that last one went.
Oh my god, and seeing the trailer for this one, that's absolutely a possibility.
what did you guys think about this, the Argos initiative? Is this what I'm assuming, like, since I guess they were the ones that brought Angela and these other hosts over, is this sort of what Ford and Arnold were working in before it formally became Delos merged in with Westworld? Are we dealing with, like, a Dharma initiative type of thing where, like, the organization might be separate from the overall stuff that's going on? I just thought it was an interesting name drop for them to just say, oh, yeah, we're representing the Argos initiative.
Yeah, I think it might be, it could just be what their company was called, like, pre-Delos kind of buying or taking control of the company. But I think it's a good call out. I mean, you just don't know. But to me, looking at it, it's like, okay, this is pre William and Logan even visiting the park. So there is no Delos investment, nor no Delos takeover.
Is Argos like the Facebook, and then Delos becomes just Facebook?
yes, and young William, who's kind of stealing the Facebook playbook. Which, you know, if this is in the future, we're like, oh, listen, Westworld is just like Facebook, but better.
Yeah, we'll take people's data. Got this great idea from this man, Mark Zuckerberg.
We'll be able to sell ads that much better because we'll know what they really, really want. Logan Delos, even in the writing, it just looks weird, but okay, gets approached by Westworld reps for investment. He gets brought to a private event, but it doesn't look so private because there's a lot of people there. He has to pick out who the robot is. And he's like, oh, delicious. Which is like, oh, Logan, I've missed you.
Weirdo. Were you guys happy to see Logan back?
Yes.
I love Logan.
Well, especially when he's like, oh, delicious. I was like, oh, Logan.
Logan is always wearing black, but I'll drop it.
Yeah, I was going to say, for those of you that don't remember, Jack's big theory that he sort of stumped for last time was like, you guys are all saying William's the man in black. No, 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 my friend. It's Logan. It's that simple.
It still should have been Logan. But
nah, that's lame.
How is it lame?
Because Harris isn't like a dark-haired dude.
I mean, yeah, Ed Harris doesn't have much hair.
I was going
to
say, how do we know?
We see he has the horseshoe left there, and there's no dark hair there. I've seen Ed Harris. Actually, has Ed Harris ever had hair? He's always been a receiver.
He had hair in something, the right stuff, but it wasn't a lot.
He didn't have hair in Apollo 13, or he had like a little bit left. I don't know. Anyway,
actually, no, Apollo 13, I think he was wearing a wig.
Yeah, to look like toupee.
To look like Gene.
Anyways, we're diverging here. He picks out who the robot is, and psych, they're all robots, which is a kind of a cool little twist there. His mind is blown. She says, all our hosts are here for you. Presumably, there's a robot orgy, because looking at the aftermath, Dolores kind of looks at what happened. It was just a bit of curiosity at old Logan Delos.
Logan was saying, I picked a bad week to give up heroin.
So what was going on with Dolores here? Because they said that, like, she's not ready yet. Was it she was experiencing, because Arnold seemed to say, like, oh, we're testing out these improvisations on her. But was it because Angela was so on track that she was the one to front it and Dolores was sort of, like, glitching out that she wasn't ready? It's just interesting sort of saying these she's not ready comments with the stare that she was giving, which made me assume that, okay, Angela took her spot as sort of the one to get rope Logan into all of this.
I think so.
I think she's saying, thank God.
Well, I think there's also an element to, and even Robert alluded to it with Arnold, like maybe Arnold didn't want to subject her to, you know, Logan's desires. They're a bit of a father figure, whatever, protector Arnold may feel towards Dolores, that he didn't want to subject her to that.
Mm-hmm. And I also will say, you know, obviously we see Angela, who has been taking more and more of a prominent role, but I don't know if you guys recognized him, but the guy who Logan was sort of shooting the shit with was the Native American guy from the saloon who got his head cut open by Bill in the very first episode of season one. The guy who plays Hansi Dent in the very good in the season two of Fargo. So I like this. And I believe from what I read in the party as well, one of the hosts is going to be the major or the general, the guy that Dolores sort of gets into that argument with at the end of the episode. So I like how they're interspersing these characters in the past as well to say that these were essentially like prototypes and models that they were trying out as well to show up. But it was such a cool moment, in my opinion. And it was really, really weighty to show the power of like, hey, this is so good that you could not tell that you were literally sitting in a room full of robots.
Yep. Exactly. Another little thing in there that I really liked was one of the guys was cleaning his glasses like Arnold did, which I thought was kind of like a cool little call out to how, you know, they probably had to program all of these different mannerisms and everything. And there you can just see, you know, one of Arnold's signature moves, the cleaning of his glasses, he kind of imprinted onto one of the people in this party.
That was cool. And that fooled Logan.
We go back to 2 weeks before with Dolores, and she now is a tech at her side, I guess, and shows Teddy his history. I'm going to call it the Daddy Teddy reel. Teddy freaks out. He chokes the tech. Why do you do this? It's just for fun. Which that's probably the wrong answer to give, you know, a now sentient robot.
First he tries to say, I didn't do anything. Yeah.
Which I think is the right answer. He did not do anything, technically. Also, really fun comment, because I think we're sort of keeping our tabs on the Dolores-Teddy relationship, the fact that Teddy is technically free, but is he really free, where Dolores tells Teddy, time to open your eyes, which is very much like something a tech would say to Dolores of, you know, wake up, give a command and all that. So it's one of those things where Dolores is going to make a lot of comparisons to, like, you know, you were praying to these gods, I've killed them, I'm your god now, essentially. Yeah. She's becoming more and more like the people she's against, the more she sort of pursues this crusade.
I forgot Teddy didn't know, he's only seen the West. You know, when he shows up at these places, he's always dead. So he was like, what is this place? He was in shock.
Yeah.
Yeah. He didn't know what was going on until Dolores said, well, you know, show him his Daddy Teddy reel.
Well, that and we'll get to it later. But Maeve kind of calls that out on Dolores a little bit for some of her more aggressive
nefarious.
There you go. Let's then go to Lawrence and Bill reunited,
and it feels so good.
Lawrence is in a precarious situation with an anthill, and Bill, with a limp, saves him. You know, he's either he's sore from riding horseback, but he seemed to have a bit of a limp. I know his arm was injured before, but it was his leg injured as well. Not before getting shot at, so he shoots out all these guys that were hanging.
He got hit.
Lawrence, and one of them still got up and shot Bill in the arm, and he says, like, get the gun, Lawrence, you ingrate. So he gets his gun, throws to Bill so he can save himself. And Lawrence kind of comments he was dead, or at least a better part of it, and then Bill says, dead isn't what it used to be, Lawrence.
Hey, that almost sounded like him.
They go to a bar. Bill cheats and gets a medic kit to fix his shotgun blasted forearm. Bill tells Lawrence he's free, but the catch is this whole place is going down in flames, and it's going to take both of us. We have a chance to see what we're made of, what we could have been. I'm going to fight my way back to make to appeal the verdict that's been given to us, and then burn this place to the ground. So Bill's going to head out west, and Lawrence tells him the only route is through Pariah because the other way has a bunch of Confederados. And Bill says, this is game will find me, huh, Robert? So kind of let's break this down a little bit here because it's kind of because we're seeing these different stories all at the same time. So we're seeing we're seeing Bernard and Charlotte kind of finding out that kind of stuff. And it seems to be tying in a little bit to maybe what Bill is referencing to what he did. And it seems like Bill and Lawrence and also Dolores and their crew are kind of heading towards the same thing with Bill going through Pariah and Dolores seemingly going through the Confederados to whatever this weapon is that we kind of find out at the end of the episode. But he's kind of saying it, but we're kind of not fully getting it. But it's being the story, or at least where they're trying to get to, is being given to us right now. Wouldn't we say that?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I think this is when Bill starts talking about, you know, people believe in God because it's some fairy tale to make people behave, and we open the park because this is where people feel like they could hide from God and commit their sins, but secretly we were watching them tallying all their sins, you know, and he talks about, I'm going to appeal my verdict, which is interesting as well, because I guess we don't necessarily, I'm wondering if there's something that's in part of the Man in Black's head of, like, atoning for his own sins.
Yeah.
Because he calls, you know, glory his biggest mistake, and it's obvious. I know he's sort of alludes to the fact, like, oh, my wife accidentally drowned in the bath. But you have to imagine at least part of him feels some resentment towards what happened with his family and the fact that, you know, his life sort of fell apart with his obsession with Westworld. So I'm wondering if he's sort of seeking his own redemption mm-hmm. through pursuing the game. But I think it's very interesting to have him sort of lay this out early on, because then we'll see the origin point of it beforehand.
Exactly. Exactly. And yeah, I'm curious to see how those two kind of timelines, how they're going to play out into the 2 weeks from then timeline, or if they will converge at the same time 2 weeks later with Bernard and where he is with the Delos security crew. So,
well, I wonder, because I mean, I guess if Teddy is sort of like our indicator here, I mean, if we're going to assume that Glory was in the bottom of that valley that's now flooded and we see Teddy there, I'd have to assume that something went down. The question is, like, where does that fall in the timeline of everything? And I'm also happy to see Lawrence back. Since I think the last time we saw him, he's like, his blood was getting drained to fill Teddy up. I'm glad they were able to patch him up. And I love how they did the thing they usually do with these Lawrence fight scenes where, like, when Lawrence is about to get killed, the camera just zooms in on him, and, like, all we see and hear are glimpses of the Man in Black killing people. again, it was a little bit of a hairier situation this time, since, as the Man in Black said, these hosts have more fortitude, even though they aren't necessarily on Dolores' side just yet. But it's a nice hallmark from season one that I'm glad they brought back.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, and the other thing is the verdict against him is what, like, yes, he has his personal demons, but is the verdict that, you know, Delos is just going to kind of try and wipe the place clean to avoid the fact they were kind of culling customer information presumably unknowing to their customers. They're just going to wipe the thing clean. Kind of the same thing that Charlotte's trying to get around right now, since she's saying no rescue is going to come until this thing's secure.
Mm. Yeah, and so I guess it could be a thing of like, is Carl Strand and the people, are they, quote unquote, the good guys that got sent in, or were they given orders to essentially like raise down everything in the park, you know, leave no stone unturned, so that way Delos can sort of wipe the slate clean, say, oh, Westworld was a failed project, look at all these casualties, let's move on with our billions of dollars and our billions of people's profiles.
Yep. If that's the true moneymaker in this, the IP, I think that's it. Let's go to Dolores and crew back in Sector 19. They're torturing the security guard to find out their protocols, find out their planned response to a system-wide outbreak. Dolores tells the tech to reanimate a Confederado and picks the one tech to do it. Do we have a name for him yet?
Tech guy.
Hopefully he lives long enough to get a name. You know, she goes back to the security guard and said, do you know what you're guarding down here? The real purpose of this place? You don't know, but I do. And then we flash back to Westworld, to the morning can drop sequence that we saw a lot in season one. And everything pauses. The helicopter comes in, and William shows Jim Papadelos, presumably after his time in the park. So everything in the past we've seen so far is before the William and Logan visit to the park. This seems to be after that. Convinces him of why he should invest. Jim Delos references his effed up son invested in this park, but they only have like 2 years left. You know, William wants to use that to their advantage to dictate their terms. Jim Delos says, I'm not interested in the future. I want to be around to really experience it. And William pitches that they can use the guests to find out what they really want. It's the only place in the world we get to see what someone truly is. If you don't see the business in that, then you aren't the businessman I thought you were. And then we get Jim using the line that Jack opened the show with. And William starts to show his billness and earns Papadelos respect and presumably full investment in the park, which kind of keeps it going. So this seems to be exactly what Dolores is referencing. This seems to be that main piece of the puzzle that is being revealed in different stories. So being alluded to in Bill and Lawrence's story, it's being revealed seemingly in Bernard and Charlotte's story, and it's one of the pieces that Dolores seems to be referencing in what she knows about this place that nobody else knows, is this conversation that she, even though she seemed to be paused, she somehow remembers or can recall to. At least that's how it's being presented in the show, right? Mm-hmm. Right?
Yes.
Yeah, I would say that. Jack, as a big Logan fan, do you feel like Papadelos, does he feel like an adequate family member to Logan? Can you see the familial connection there?
I just think Logan's getting a bad rap. I mean, I'm sorry. I mean, it was he invested. He was right to invest in it, right? And here comes William. Oh, I'll take over. Blah blah blah. Yeah, whatever.
No, I think William had the better pitch, right? It's this. Logan was just like, he wants his free orgy park, but William has the thing that'll actually make a lot of money in the.
Yeah, place. I mean, and it's coming back to this idea of reality, which I feel like is a common theme with Westworld. I mean, I know that William's going to talk about it later. We keep going back to this idea of, does this let you be the person that you want to be? And William says, no, it's more so a reflection of the person that you actually are. And so it's less about fantasies, which maybe Logan was plugging, and more so about reality, which I think Papadelos is more so grounded in. But yeah, I think Bill got right on the money when he said essentially, like, this is one big focus group where you can watch people behave in a manner. It's like if you put a hidden camera in a room and you watch people interact, you know, which is like the origin of like reality TV essentially, and why it was so interesting. It's because you're watching people actually behave in real time and what sort of appeals to their base senses. That's the best form of marketing possible. You don't need to guess what people want. You can see literally what they want in front of them. Though,
right.
I mean, I don't know, they might, then their products would probably be based out of a lot of like antiquated Western things that they're dealing specifically with Westworld. But if it speaks to their base desires, I guess it'll, whatever, you know, gets money in your pocket.
But I think most people had would want to go to a place like Westworld, right? I mean, it's not a hard sell. I mean, it's like I would go in a second.
Again, you look at like Facebook. Facebook, a lot of people do Farmville or Candy Crush or do those surveys. Like, what Ninja Turtle would you be? But like that's the entertainment they get from it. But what they're getting is like intel about you and like what are your shopping habits or how do you vote or whatever. Like they're getting that information just based on your usage. You aren't actively doing things maybe related to what intel they're getting, but they're able to get it based upon your behaviors.
Now, was William always, did he always have an evil streak, or did something happen to change his?
Well, no, I think he even references it. He did change. Like it's
Was it the death of his wife?
No.
I would say that I think that, again, going back to this idea of like, it's not necessarily who he wanted to be. I think it was sort of baked within him, and maybe his lifestyle and his position in the company, you know, Logan makes fun of him for like striving to be executive or junior vice president. I think what's sort of awakened in William is like, for lack of a better term, but he found something to fight for in Dolores. Yeah. I think he found a true passion that sort of awakened him and sort of lit this fire underneath his ass. That now he like, I mean, you could tell he is really working to get Westworld invested in. And part of it, I think, is still because of his lingering feelings for Dolores and the fact that like he felt like such a complete person within this part, to the point of, as he says, it's not a fantasy for him. It's reality.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yep. I mean, okay. And we see that, you know, in old Bill. He's still playing this game, and now he feels like he's finally able to play it as it's truly meant to be, without any bumpers in the bowling lane.
No do-overs.
Yeah. And so then we go to Dolores and crew cross paths with Maven crew. Dolores makes a pitch for her to join her rebellion. Maeve questions the virtuosity of Dolores' quest. Teddy draws his gun to protect her, saying he wants to keep the peace. Maeve questions his intent. Did she plant a kernel of doubt in Teddy's mind? I don't know. If she can control, she didn't use that power with Dolores and her kind. Maven crew go about their way. Also, Lee looks hilarious. Is he being dressed up as like a young Amish boy? Like, what's the?
he's in the Amish part. They have Amish part.
Did you enjoy that at least, Mike? There's not a single Lee line.
Remembering how uncomfortable he is. Remember that he's not wearing underwear as well. I thought it was. We'll definitely talk about the scene, but I thought it was also a fun like meeting of the two sides here, where you have the two steely leaders, you have their seconds in command who are both sort of like, yeah, I love this person, so I guess I'm here for it. And you have these two like freaked out staff members who clearly do not want to be there.
Well, now this is which one is right, Maeve or Dolores? Because Dolores, her revenge is all of what she remembers. She even tells Maeve, you know what you did. You don't want to get revenge or whatever. I can't remember the exact term she used, but Dolores wants revenge. Dolores, this is my dream. You're going to do it my way. Is she going to end up being the bad we see as the bad person?
Well,
because she's doing to the hosts what was done to her. If they don't do it her way, she takes them out.
Remember that revenge, Maeve's been down that road before. Yeah. That was her entire like latter half of season one arc, right? Was her sort of coming into existence and then saying like, okay, I'm going to break out of this park. I'm going to get revenge on these humans, only to realize, oh, here's the revelation. Someone's been plotting for you to do this the entire time, which I think is really brings meaning behind her sentence. You know, revenge is just a different prayer at their altar, darling, and I'm well off my knees, which has a couple of interesting meanings given her previous profession as well. But I honestly think it's something where, you know, maybe because Dolores came into consciousness a few episodes after Maeve, maybe it's because Maeve has explored the backside of Delos much more than Dolores had. I still feel like Maeve sort of has the upper hand from a mentality perspective, in that she's saying, like, this should not be the end game. You know, the end game is me pursuing my end goal, and your end goal might be to take care of everyone. But the fact of the matter is, you're still listening to a voice at the end of the day that's not yours.
And she definitely seems kind of post.
I just feel that like Dolores, like Maeve, is right like you now. Said, she did go, but Dolores, she's just. I think she's.
I, I think she said it. I mean, she explicitly said it. She's been there, she's seeking something else now. And their paths may reconvene at a later date. We don't know, but they're definitely on different paths in their journey.
Any thought about the significance of the title reunion? Because I mean, if you checked out some of like the promotional stuff before this episode, we saw pictures of like, oh, this is Maeve and Dolores, who again have not met since that one time in like episode 2. When Dolores tells Maeve these violent delights have violent ends to sort of have her spinning off on her path, but they never really interacted after that.
Mm-hmm.
I think there are some other, you know, people that could be brought into this. Like,
oh, yeah.
William and Dolores is a good example of that during that last scene when they come back together. But what do you think about this? Did it live up to the hype in terms of these two characters coming back together, two ships passing in the night?
I think it was fine. It depends on the expectation. To me, like, I didn't have this great, I can't wait till they get back together. So I didn't have high expectations that need to be met. I thought it was fine because they are in very different paths. So I think it was appropriate in that they are kind of ships passing in the night right now because their visions aren't aligned. Their goals aren't aligned. And I think this could be like an early paths crossing where they aren't. And then maybe later on in the season or later in future seasons, they will be aligned. And I think it'll be a pretty powerful power couple to be reckoned with, or they end up being at completely different ends of the spectrum and they become enemies. So I feel like there's different ways it could go, and I thought the way this scene played out was appropriate to where their journeys are at the moment.
Why do you think Dolores let her go?
I think she realized that, you know, I thought Maeve presented herself quite accurately and kind of got them all to kind of question themselves just a little bit.
Okay.
And kind of saying, you know, if you're all for freedom, then let me go.
Right.
Yeah, I think that she might, even though it was only two people, I think Dolores is still coming to terms with, like, how to be a leader and deal with a complicated, self-efficient mind frame. And maybe part of that is her saying, well, that makes sense. And plus, let's also remember that Maeve has, like, her charisma maxed out to the wazoo. So, I mean, she was probably able to convince her way past her.
Exactly.
And let's also remember, so I believe that, I mean, Dolores hasn't been killing hosts yet. It'll happen, I think, maybe like a few days down the line when she starts killing off members of Ghost Nation. So I don't think she's necessarily in the mood yet of, okay, we can kill off some hosts. I think it's more so like, I'm going for humans and humans only.
Well, she might not be personally killing them, but the members of her group are killing hosts. But then, you know, like we'll see in the next scene.
Yeah. So yeah. Dolores makes a call to a Confederado group to join her. They're not having it, and she kills them all. Then brings them back online. Then they fall in line with their tech in tow. So dead isn't dead. I know that was a big sticking point for you last episode, Jack. That if dead isn't dead, well, then this show is horrible.
Well, you have tech guy. As long as tech guy's there, he could bring them back.
And but I mean, we're speaking around the point here, guys. Dolores literally has a zombie army now at her behest.
Well, that's what I think I question. How's she going to get enough people to fight? Well, she's bringing the people back online. Like Spet said, they have to follow her.
Except for that Ghost Nation guy. She didn't bring him back.
No.
We flash back to Papa Delos' retirement party, a.k.a. the Bill Ascension party. We have Dolores on piano. Bill's daughter Emily approaches her, but her mom wants her away. Even there, you can see there's some tension / I don't know. Emily is four, five? So that's a good bit of time since the Will Logan bachelor party weekend, right?
Go
ahead.
Yeah, I would say so. I also like the fact that, I mean, we'll talk about this later with the piano, but, I mean, first of all, Dolores is at the piano, so we're not in the player piano territory yet. They're still recruiting hosts as piano players, but, I mean, you know, when Papa Delos tells her to play Gershwin is, you know, more so known for taking these classical pieces that, like Chopin or other types of things, but infusing more of a jazzy influence to them, and what's one of the main tenets of jazz music is improvisation, which is a key facet of Dolores and the reverie sort of coming into her own is this idea of improvisations and straying from the classical music. So I just thought that was a fun musical touch. Again, we always go back to the music on Westworld because I feel like each and every note in there is there for a reason. So that was a fun just random reference that, you know, Papadelos might be hinting at something larger aside from him just not liking classical music.
Yeah, no, I think it's a great call, because Gershwin is very much like if you play classical all the time, but you want to like jazz it up a bit, he's the perfect artist for that, and it is very much kind of transitions in and out, and it's very fresh and modern. I mean, even whenever like people play Rhapsody in Blue, there's a bunch of improvised parts, which is kind of before that unheard of in a classical composition. So yeah, I think that's a great call out. Jack, I'm sorry, you're going to say something.
I was just saying, you mentioned how the wife looks at Dolores, and you know, when Emily comes over there, Emily, get away from her. You know, oh, come over here. There's some friction there. Does she know what's going on with
that Will loves another?
I would assume that once William got back, like his fixation, he probably did not do a great job of hiding when it came to Westworld. She also, who knows if she has been, I know that she's, you know, Delos's daughter and Logan's sister. But we don't know if she's actually been in the park. So she could also just have this general thing of like, these robots are weird. Emily, get away from the robot. Yep. It's dangerous.
Yeah, that could be. Yeah, it's true.
Bill now, and
the wife dies accidentally in the bathtub, right?
Yeah.
Accidentally.
Yeah.
Heavy quotations.
I think it could have been Dolores.
Yeah, I don't know.
Could it have been Logan?
I think, again, why I put it in quotations is because I think she committed suicide.
Yeah.
Because I think that she was probably living a pretty darn miserable existence being married to the man in black, considering what he was fixated upon and how that might have, you know, wore down their marriage.
Yeah. Bill and Papadelos have a convo about his impending death / stepping down. Yeah.
I'll say that was a little, I love this episode, but that was a little heavy handed of like, I don't know what's going on. I will not have a very long future. Like, thank you, writers, for underlining that with a Sharpie that we get it. He's dying.
So he asked Dolores to keep playing, but no effing Chopin. So she plays some Gershwin. Later that night, she looks at the city skyline. It looks like the same city skyline, just from this really cool kind of beach house. And she stumbles on a drug injecting Logan. And he has this dialogue or monologue. Do you know what they're celebrating up there? Those are the fools fiddling with the whole effing space. While the whole effing species starts to burn. The funniest part, they lit the match. And he toasts to them, here's to you a-holes, may you forever be, your forever be blissfully short. So is this just a kind of a jealous, butthurt Logan, or is there some wisdom in his words here?
Well, I think he's been kicked out, right? So
he's on the outs now.
He's definitely on the outs.
It's just a little jade, it's a little like King Lear, like the spurned daughter, you know, feeling a little bitter about it. But I think that Logan made an interesting point specifically about the, you know, the fools fiddling while the whole species starts to burn. Obviously references Rome, but I find it interestingly pairs with William or Bill talking about how, you know, I'm going to burn this place to the ground. There's a lot of like interesting comparisons there about how, you know, he feels like the robots will be responsible for the place burning, whereas Bill's going to be the one to say, and maybe this is for his own purposes to sort of eliminate his incriminatory evidence, for him to say, I'm going to burn it down. So, I mean, we got to turn to Billy Joel and see who started the fire. Is it going to be the humans or is it going to be the host at the end of the day?
It was Ryan, wasn't it?
Yes. We'll see who made a, let's try to make a hot pocket in the microwave at the Delos HQ.
It was always burning since the world has been turning. I got to love a Billy Joel reference. William Joel. Let's go again.
Uh-oh. Bill Joel?
Oh my God.
I mean, Billy Joel has been wearing a lot of black nowadays, just saying.
Slimming.
Don't let him drive.
Oh. Going to Bill and Lawrence. They get to a different pariah sign with the hanging dead man. There's a lot of dead hosts, so it looks like the crazy orgy is over. They're surrounded by the new El Lazo and crew, played wonderfully by the Giancarlo Esposito. Bill makes a pitch for him and his crew to join him on his quest. El Lazo shares a story about circus elephants and the stick. which I thought
was I thought it was fascinating.
No, it's again he can chew up a scene. I thought he did a great job. And he says, "I won't be going with you. My labors are done." Robert doesn't let him. Doesn't let Bill use his men. He says, "This game was made for you, but you must play it alone." And all the men kill themselves, and El Lazo shoots himself. And says, "I'll see you in the valley beyond." So again, I'll go on towards this apex here, which gets Bill to say, "F you, Robert." And then Lawrence asks, "Who's Robert? You know, did he build this place you're looking for?" And Bill says, "No, I built it. It's my greatest mistake." Which then cuts to this scene, which we assume is the mistake. Young William and Dolores, presumably after his ascension / Papa Delos's death party. "I can't believe I fell in love with you," he says to Dolores. "You know what saved me. I realized it wasn't about you at all. You made me see me, your reflection." He wants to use their kind to be a mirror. And he says, "I think there is something here that's a question of something no one is looking for." And then he shows her the Earth Mover machines that we saw when Robert's kind of intimidated. It's Teresa, right?
Yeah.
I believe so.
He says to her, "Have you ever seen something with such splendor?" And then we kind of cut to the last scene where Dolores and crew overlook the Confederado camp. And she references, or Teddy references, you know, glory, valley beyond. What is, you know, it's all the same thing. And Dolores doesn't care what they call it. It's not a place. It's a weapon. And someone was foolish enough to show it to me.
Right.
And then the end. So thoughts here.
So I guess we can start here with the El Lazo.
Yeah.
Bill stuff. Because we can. I mean, it's so interesting in that there's a lot of Bill talk in that scene about this idea of the end. When they first approach Pariah, he tells Lawrence, "This is what happens when you let a story play all the way out." He tells El Lazo, "You know, if you get me to the door, I can promise you a real ending." So I feel like there may be some allusions on the writer's part to, you know, how this might not necessarily be like a big happy ending, though I don't think any of us were really expecting that from Westworld, but yeah. I thought this idea of like termination and a final ending point was very interesting. Also, El Lazo's story with the circus elephants and the stick, the stake in the ground. I think it's basically saying how, I don't know, I feel like it's I don't know if it's El Lazo talking or if it's Ford talking, since Ford also really likes to talk in stories. But I think it's this idea of like, you know, if you instill a mentality of superiority in an animal early on, even when it grows up to be bigger and larger than you, you'll still have dominance over it. So I guess that's sort of what we're alluding to with this human host relationship a bit. Maybe I'm looking into it a little too much, but this idea that, you know, arguably the host can overpower the humans. We're seeing that right now, but because the hosts were led to believe that like they're essentially players in the humans' game, they haven't been able to rise up until this moment.
Exactly.
Now, could we see El Lazo again, though?
Or my question is, will we? Because this is the second time Robert has appeared, quote unquote, through one of his robots,
right?
Or hosts. So will we get a different host acting as Robert every single episode, taunting Bill?
I would say so. I think it's just like, you know, little signpost popping up to say essentially you're going the right way. I mean, we saw that last season with Arnold popping up and like the Ford boy and in the, you know, Lawrence's daughter. Speaking of Lawrence, I am surprised that, you know, Ford made all the Confederados and Pariah kill themselves, but Lawrence is still alive. Do we think that he won't make it as well? Do you think he's going to serve a larger purpose, or that he's sort of the Sancho Panza to the crazed Don Quixote that is Bill at this point?
Well, I think even Bill even references, like, you're a guide. I mean, this is what your programming is. You're a guide for people to help. So it's like in his nature to be this, or to be this companion.
Yeah, he said this is in your nature.
Yeah, exactly. So I think Lawrence is kind of playing what he's been programmed to do. He's not so much on his own freedom quest or a rebellion quest. Seemingly Bill is right or smartly taking advantage of that. Possibly.
Mm-hmm. Do we think that this is, I mean, I'm trying to remember. Had we seen Pariah, the modern day Pariah? I can't remember.
Saw it in the William Logan time.
Yeah, because I know we saw back when that was the hot piece. But I'm trying to remember. I remember they mentioned that Pariah had gone to ruin, but I can't remember if the Man in Black or modern day Dolores and Teddy had gone through the ruined Pariah before the new El Lazo took over.
I don't think so. But yeah. Let's see. The Earth machines, is this the weapon that Dolores is talking about? We saw them in action with Robert last season. I think it also ties into when they get to where they thought or where they had to get to where they saw these hosts, but the landscape was completely changed. So we could maybe also assume that is what Dolores was going towards, and she has those now, and it's thrown off the Delos crew 2 weeks after the incident. But is that what they're going for? Is the Earth moving machines, or is it something more?
I think it's something more. Jack, if you want to yell out a safe word if we're getting too much into crackpot theory territory.
No, you guys are fine.
Well, I think that I don't think it's necessarily the Earth moving machines. I don't know. I'm trying to figure out if this weapon is literal or metaphoric. Because if it's a literal weapon, it could sort of be the version of Jughead, the nuke from Lost, where if it's a fail-safe button where if you press it, it basically raises the entire park. So Dolores could do something to, in fact, wipe out all the humans in there. Or it could be sort of the safekeeping of all of the encrypted data of the the guests. You know, maybe that's where Abernathy went to, that Charlotte and Bernard are going to try to track down. We do see, not to spoil next episode too much, but I believe we see a scene next week with Bernard and Dolores together. We don't know how far back that is or if it's in modern day, but it could be possible that maybe one of the reasons why she knows about that and she says it's a weapon is because she can get in there, blackmail Delos or Strand or whoever with saying, hey, I have all these people's data and I'm going to destroy it if I don't get my way. I feel like there are a million different ways to go with this.
Or let it out, actually let it out that Delos has been doing this. That's another way to kind of create panic or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe.
Yeah, there has to be a reason they keep bringing up the data so that they've taken, the DNA and stuff. So, yeah, that's a great possibility.
Well, what do you guys think about, because are we assuming that, because William was sort of one of the main shareholders in the company that was sort of keeping it afloat, what did they give him, hey, here's your little project, you can get your own city? Because we talked before about how I guess he has a couple of cabins around last episode, but I don't know, is this is this overstepping boundaries to give a shareholder access to create a city? Or I would not believe that Ford and or Arnold did not know about this, considering that they pretty much know everything that's going on at the park at any point in time.
Well, and maybe that was part of Ford's big play, and that's why he has this game for Bill now. It's Ford knew what was going on, didn't approve of it, and this is maybe his play to kind of bring it all down on top of William. And that's the game he set up for him.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's also interesting as well when I thought this was, we don't touch upon the idea of spirituality a lot in Westworld. I know we keep going back to this idea of the humans were gods, now they're not gods. But I thought Teddy had an interesting comment that you talked before about, Jay, when he said, it's glory, the valley beyond. He says, feels like everyone has a different name for it, but it's all the same destination. I don't know, not to get too holistic and religious about everything, but I feel like that's a very similar way where a lot of different sects and religions have different names for this idea of the afterlife and a heaven or a hell. So I think it speaks interestingly that you have these people sort of from different faiths and backgrounds in Dolores and Teddy and Bill and Lawrence and God knows who else coming together, converging on this same point. And who knows, maybe this is a form of the afterlife in a way, shape, or form.
You mean they're all dead? It's purgatory?
It's the church.
They've been dead the whole time. Great.
Jim Dillis is going to be there saying oh, they're waiting for you. Go ahead. Ignore the guy sitting on the bench outside.
He's not allowed
to go.
He
turned Irish all of a sudden, too.
I believe the actor is Scottish. He did his voice did remind me a bit of Scrooge McDuck.
You're right. It is very, I thought it was Australian, but you're right. It is Scottish. But But yeah, I think this episode I really enjoyed. Like peeling back the different layers of the onion here and learning more. We did talk about how do we like this more than the first episode. I think I did on second viewing and first viewing. Things are coming more into focus through this episode. And it's always good to check in with young Bill and Logan.
I understood it more watching the first time I watched. I was like, I don't know what the hell is going on. I mean, I like I said, my wife, I go, you just kind of have to go with the story. I can't explain it.
Well, is that because the first episode, though, sort of set up this idea that we would be jumping around a lot? I mean, I would say argue the first season finale really brought up this idea that we were jumping around a lot. But this sort of substantiated this storytelling device of like, hey, look, we're going to leave you as disoriented as Bernard is in this day and age with just jumping around a lot. But I agree that I personally feel like I enjoyed this episode more because, well, I feel like the first episode did a great job of sort of both briefing viewers who might not have seen this show in a year and a half and sort of prepping us for what's to come. This really let us dig our teeth into the origins of Westworld, the purpose behind Westworld, the mythos of Westworld. Like a lot of that juicy stuff, that delicious stuff, to quote Logan, that we really enjoy from the first season. But I know that Jay and I are super high on it. Jack, so now that you've sort of talked this out and maybe abated some of your confusions, I'd be intrigued to know where you fall on it now.
I'm on the episode? Oh, I loved it. I thought it was great. I wanted to point out, too, that the scene at the end with Dolores and Teddy. I know we've talked about the music and the writing. The scenery in this show is just amazing. And that final shot, I was like, going, that's just the perfect Western shot. It's almost like Lost, where Lost had the great scenery and everything. I said that would make a great poster. I don't know. Let's get working on that, guys, at Westworld. I love the scenery Westworld. I know what you're trying to say. Yeah, it's just excellent, and I love this show. I love the episode.
But I love it because it's also like this absolute beautiful landscape, but within it contains such like horrible things as well. I think it's a nice comparison where
that's real world. I mean, that's just how life is.
Yeah. But I guess also compare that to like Game of Thrones, where like the environment always seems like it's gray and muddy and dirty. And it sort of informs the theming of the show. I feel like Westworld's a little deceptive in that it's almost like here is this beautiful flesh-like face. And underneath it is a bunch of wires and metal and dangerous things.
Yep. Yeah. Exactly. It's deep. It's real deep.
go deep.
Do we think this is the last time we're going to see Papa Delos? Do we assume that this was sort of his one and done? Now we know who he is.
I think so. Do we need any more for him? I don't need more of him.
We know apparently what he's dying from, a bad cough. So answer that question, folks.
There you go.
He's a lunger.
Maybe Logan kills him. I don't know. Maybe Logan kills
everybody. Why do you keep thinking that Logan's gonna kill people?
Yeah,
because he's at rock bottom.
How many times do we have to show that Logan's just a loser for you to like finally give up that Logan's not some big mastermind?
People killing people, that doesn't make him a great person. I mean, that's even more of a loser, right?
Well, I think that I would say that Logan more than anything is like castrated by all this. I think that he went into the park with such amount of braggadocio. And now it's interesting to sort of see that first scene that we talked about in the beginning of this episode. And then think about Logan in the first season of Westworld, where he comes in with William and is saying like, you can do whatever you want. And he's like the one that's grabbing all of these both male and female hosts to do things with. Like now it all makes sense considering that's the way he got brought into the company in particular.
Yeah, exactly. And do we need to see any more of Logan? I feel like his story is kind of complete to me.
Oh, we need Logan on every episode. What are you talking about? Well, didn't Logan say in the open when William was tired and he goes, did he say he's married to Mike? Can you believe this guy's married
dating,
to my sister? Can you believe he's dating my sister?
So again, that puts it before the bachelor party.
Yeah. Well, I'm just saying you can see that he never really respected William.
No, but William got his respect in the end.
I mean, I think he begrudgingly brought William into Westworld. Let's remember in those first few episodes, he's like, God, what a freaking loser. Whenever William's like, I want to help bring in this guy with the sheriff. And Logan was complaining the entire time. I wonder, to your point, though, I mean, would Logan, I mean, who knows if he ends up, like, dying in some sort of fashion, but A, would we see old Logan, or B, if he died before the, like, Bill's, you know, timeline, do we think we would actually see that, or we think it's innocuous enough it doesn't need to happen?
I don't think we're going to see an older Logan.
No, because, I mean, to me, they set up with the drug use, you know, you could just see him kind of wasting away.
He's rock bottom. He's rock bottom. He's, you know, he's been pushed. He's been kicked to the curb. I don't see him making
it. And he kind of made a toast where he's kind of saying, you know, here's a toast for the douchebags.
Or he could be in prison with all the murders he's committed.
Here's a toast for the a-holes.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's. Yeah, that, I agree that was sort of like him giving his own send off by essentially saying like, y'all are screwed. I see it now. Bye. So yeah, I guess I could say, like, if this is a wrap on Logan, I would understand that, because I think Logan also served as a good, I mean, Logan was served as a plot point in William's narrative, almost, to see that, like, because of his sort of prodding and pushing into doing some of this bad stuff in Westworld, that sort of pushed him into that Man in Black territory. So it's bad to say, since I like Ben Barnes and the character at least has some comic relief, but I don't know how much use we have of him yet. So that might be a wrap on two out of the three major Delos men.
And yeah, I mean, but again, who knows? I didn't think we'd have any more Logan this season, and we got him. So who knows? For the Logan fans out there, Jack, there's still hope that you'll get some more Logan.
There's quite a few of us.
There's literally dozens.
Well, I would go that far. I was going to say five or six. You want to say dozens?
That
cool.
was like, Arrested Development joke, but. Anyways,
yeah. It's in the banana stand or whatever it's the joke is.
No, it's never nudes. Anywho,
no banana stand.
That is what we thought about this episode. Let's get into what you thought with some listener feedback.
Listener feedback.
All right, it's listener feedback time. We've got some emails to get into. Maybe even an Ethan email, Jack.
This day just got better.
First up is an Abernathy crackpot theory. Peter Abernathy is going to be a major figure in season 2. We already saw how unhinged he was by just a little knowledge of the outside world, that photograph, and now Charlotte has uploaded all the data to his brain and let him out. My theory is that this massive upload of knowledge will lead Peter to a religious awakening in which he claims to grasp the meaning of the universe. He'll become a fire and brimstone preacher, spreading his vision to other hosts around the park and winning over a fanatical following, maybe a death cult, that believes that some great apocalypse mass suicide is necessary to break the loop of their programming. I think his followers will square off against Dolores' revolutionaries, who want the real freedom as possible, and a father-daughter civil war. That's my crackpot theory, and I'm sticking to it. Thanks for a great show, Max from Charlottesville.
I really like this. And maybe just because we all show our appreciation for the actor who played Peter Abernathy last season. He was so good. But, I mean, let's also remember that Abernathy's history, before he was Dolores' father, I believe he was a professor, and he was also the leader of a cannibal cult.
Yes.
So I feel like if he has that combined with, as Max is talking about, just all this information in him, it really could lead him to sort of feel like he's hearing voices, go a little crazy, become a zealot, maybe. I mean, I don't know how much you can mine out of that necessarily, but it's an interesting place where they left the character. I just assumed that Charlotte had, like, packed him away in a box and sent him out of the park. I didn't realize that he was still roaming around the area.
Well, we don't know for sure. Who knows? Anything's possible. But I think it's a really cool theory. It's a really good, worthy crackpot theory, unlike what Jack brings to the table.
This it was Max, right? Not Ethan?
That was.
Oh, yeah. Great email. Great.
All right, this next one is from Chris. Hey, guys, love that I found your podcast, because Westworld is too much for any one person to handle. I've got two theories / things of notice from this week's episode. First, in the opening credits, the hat you see seems to change colors as it blocks out the sun, going from light white to dark black to possibly indicate William's transition to the Man in Black. Also, the fantastic logo for this podcast. Hello.
Yeah.
Second, my larger, crazier theory is that possibly the park has some sort of Inception-like qualities where your dreams from both the past and present can come to life and affect your surroundings. In episode 1, we heard Bernard talking about an ocean. Then we see the host drowning. Episode 2, we hear multiple mentions of burning our world in fire. Then see multiple parts of the park burning, namely the scene with Dolores Maeve and Bill slash Lawrence. Also, multiple references to Lost have been made, probably J.J. Abrams' involvement. So having Jonah Nolan around might be creating the NCU, Nolan Cinematic Universe. Sorry for the long train of thought, and thanks for the content, Chris. So how about that? An NCU. We have the MCU and the NCU.
That's too close together.
That's true.
You don't pronounce things close enough, you get things very confusing, you end up spoiling things. But to the NCU point, since I know Jonah Nolan worked with his brother on Interstellar, I have seen some theories ruminating about that maybe Westworld might be in space. Just because maybe there's some debate there with like the space, who takes control of what space, what? Part of space, which is where you get into control of China. I think there people are fixating on this idea that the security team took 2 weeks to get out there, and you think like, why would it take one team 2 weeks to get out there when, you know, even when communications go down, like they need to secure each sector as they talked about last time, and if they have to get out to space, that might be a reason why.
I think we talked about it being on another planet last year.
It was brought up. It was like one of those kind of very crackpot theories.
Like I said last week, this place is mammoth. I mean, you don't see any, and there's no wild animals running around.
I mean,
Robo tiger. There's no real animals. I mean, there's nothing. So, it's either some virtual reality type thing, or
well, it's not virtual reality. I mean, because Logan kind of confirmed that.
That's true. But it's another. It's got to be either another planet or something else, because it's just too damn big.
Well,
we've only seen the one part, and it goes on. Like Teddy said, we went 10 miles. It's too big.
But what's to say? I mean, they have all this terraforming technology. What's to say that they didn't build an island? Yeah. Out there in the middle of the ocean, that it's not necessarily natural that they said, okay, we're going to construct this thing. I mean, you don't want to assume that they want to have as much control as possible, including the land itself. Yeah. I think it's totally in the realm of possibilities for them to say, yeah, we're going to build out an island to put our robots.
But then why would it take 2 weeks to get to the location?
Yeah, it's I mean, maybe the sector, maybe it's out there,
storm.
Got lost. Well, maybe the sector thing might be something where like they had to check in at all these different points. Yep. And go through all these, lead through all this red tape. But I guess going back to what you were saying before, Jack, does this tie into then your thoughts on this theory about how the park has some sort of Inception like quality where sort of if you make a reference to something, especially like natural disaster wise, there's a chance it may actually happen?
I would think so. I mean, there's so much about it's almost like Lost. I hate to go on Lost. Like the island had all this mystery. This place, and we really don't talk too much about it because we don't know anything about it. But there's something going on that we may never find out, or we may find out a couple seasons from now. So a couple seasons from now would be like 10 years. So 10 years from now, we'll find out what's going on. But it's been bugging me since like I need to go back and listen to the podcast. I'm sure I started complaining about it like first or second episode, because the place is just like the movie. It was just, you've seen the movie. It's just a small little location, but
mm-hmm. I think if you're even using like terraforming, you could make a huge island in the Pacific Ocean, which is gigantic, like compared to
know,
the entirety of the United States. You could put, four of them in the Pacific. I mean, there's a lot of space out there.
What would that cost, though?
I don't know. You heard they were blowing through money. So
yeah, I mean, maybe they sunk all their money in, you know, building a big ass island.
Well, maybe that's what they use the DNA for, to blackmail people.
Your perception of land. I feel like there could easily be an island out there that you don't know of, Jack, that could easily have the space requirements needed to be this park. And then you just terraform the crap out of it.
Maybe the island just keeps hopping around.
Oh, God. Let's not get into that.
Jay, do you have any thoughts on this, like, Inception? Because I agree that, like, it is interesting that when things get mentioned to occur in dreams or, like, I mean, the fire wasn't in a dream, though. It seems like the water is the one thing for Bernard. So I don't know if it's necessarily a thing of, you know, if you say it, it will come true. But I think it's more symbolic than anything that, like,
yeah.
Or maybe I feel like the flood thing was more that it was supposed to lead us down the path of, oh, Bernard really did do it because he had this, him or Arnold had this dream about, you know, big flood and being on the shore.
Or if someone says it, someone's controlling the actions.
Oh.
Like man behind the curtain, it's like, okay, flood. Okay, we're going to give you a flood.
Maybe. I think it's more like a nice thematic element to the story than, you know, think it and it will happen kind of thing. Because Inception, like an Inception type ability, would be a bit of a head trip, which Inception was, and the Nolan brothers are not shy of doing. But I think it's more of a nice story element than thinking it, and then it comes to real life. But I could be wrong.
They will come.
If you build it, they will come.
Does that mean that Logan's going to get Papa Delos to come out of the cornfield and play catch with him?
Dad?
No, Logan's going to choke on a hot dog.
No, it's like, Dad, do you want to take a hit of heroin?
Sure, son.
don't get me. I'll start tearing up.
All right. And we'll go to the last email. We'll close out with Ethan.
Oh, my God.
Hello. What show are we watching? We are jumping through time, looking for a weapon, buying a company, seeing Teddy rage out, collecting red shirts everywhere, and seeing Lee size bloom in cute little knickers.
please don't give him my name.
I love this email already.
I love the Logan stuff. The Westworld pitch was awesome. We knew what was happening. It was great nonetheless. I really hope this Logan story continues. Both him and William have changed immensely from their visit to the park together. As we see what becomes of William, I hope if there is a future for Logan and they meet again in the future. Well, if you listened to some of our theories earlier, you may not be long-lived, but you never know. Talk about nefarious thinking.
Thank you.
William is way ahead of his family on this one. They can only see the carnal pleasure in the park while he sees Dr. Evil type potential. I'm planting the flag even more now. Dolores versus Maeve. It's going to happen. Clehecta Teddy Gain Bowl. What was William building? What did Dolores see? Where's Bernard? Lost vibes up to level 4 or 8 or 15, maybe even 16. Let's talk about Gus, Elazo. This game is so tailored to William. I can't but make a prediction. In Season 1, Ford thrived on control in the maze, and then he was dead. So William, in Season 2, is thriving on chaos and the door. I think the William Season 2 arc is clear, and he won't make it out alive. Question for you. Old man Delos says to Dolores something like, keep playing, but not Chopin. What gives? More of a Liszt man myself. And I mean, honestly, I love Chopin. I think he's a great romantic era composer that I think really did color out of the lines for his era. This is just my own opinion. This is not Ethan talking here. So I don't get the Chopin hate. I do think he's a great composer. The real burner this week is, who is not Ethan? Why is he so not popular? I like him or her. I'm not sure. They could be not fluid, not Ethan. I'm totes fluid.
Oh, no. Ethan. We got a Papa Delo situation going on with Jack.
Don't worry, my friend. I myself need a TV show podcast to enjoy the ever dulcet tones of Jack Klatfelter. totes fluid, Ethan. P.S. I'm not going to say that. He put an Infinity War spoiler in here. I'm not going to say that. Oh my God. Ethan, I'll put a P.S. here for his favorite screen cap from this week's show. I'll post it up on the Facebook tonight. And it is a screen cap of Lee Sizemore, but he is put. Young Mike Bloom's face on Lee Sizemore.
Oh my God!
All right, Ethan is starting to. I'm starting to warm up to Ethan. I don't know why.
Oh man! So hopefully Ethan posts that on our Facebook group, facebook.com/group/JinJackGroup, if you want to see his favorite screen cap from the episode.
Well, despite my consternation towards this shipping that I have been dragged into, I'm going to agree with Ethan's theory where I don't know if the Man in Black is going to make it out of Westworld. Because again, I'm going back to this thing that he said where, you know, this is what happens when you let a story play all the way out, indicating all the dead bodies that accrued in Pariah. Maybe that's him foreshadowing the fact that when his story gets played all the way out, you know, he thought he achieved this game with the maze. The maze was not meant for him. This game is. When it finally is game over, does that mean that he's fulfilled his purpose and is now dead? And whether that means him preventing Dolores from opening this door and, you know, succeeding in her goals, whether that means, you know, him succeeding in his goals but dying along the way, I'm not entirely sure. But yeah. I'll put a hand on top of the flag that Ethan has planted. we'll talk about the Maid Dolores stuff as well. But I think when it comes to the Bill dies this season, I think I might plant my flag there too.
I agree he will die. I don't know if it'll be this season, but I think he does die. I think he almost says it every. He said it the first two episodes, basically. So I agree with Ethan. I agree with you, Teddy Sizemore.
What did you think about the other claim, though, about the... Because we talked about Maeve versus Dolores, but now that we've sort of seen them square off for the first time, what do you think they would come to a head over? I have a thought, but I would love to...
I have a theory on that, so I got to wait.
Okay, well, if you got to wait, I got to say, I think there's already some tension.
If you say my theory, I have nothing else.
I feel bad for you. I really do.
Okay.
No, but I think it's going to come down to, she even kind of said it, you know, you're talking about you want to set everybody free, whatever, but everybody has to kind of follow your orders. Are we really free? I think Maeve's on a more advanced level of thinking, given that she's upped her intelligence to the maximum level. That's why I think maybe the...
So you're saying Dolores is stupid?
No, I'm just saying I think Maeve seems to be more evolved through her own tinkering with her mind, but
I'll wait to give my thoughts until Jack's theory because I don't want to ruin it.
All right, well, given that Jack doesn't want us to ruin his theory, why don't we go to your crackpot theory, Action Jackson?
Well, obviously, I think we all believe that there's going to be some friction or some, you know, they're going to go after each other, right?
Yep.
Because it's, you have two strong personalities, and I think it's amazing too. It's two strong women personalities. I mean, it's not two men. You know, the leads of this show are the women right now,
which I love. I think that's a great.
It's fantastic.
Specifically, the ones in power are the women, which I like that right. as well. Especially season one was, since the women in the Western community are usually more subjugated, and they're serving as, you know, the farmer's daughter and the leader of the Maison Derrière. I'm glad that they sort of rose into their own power in that perspective. It's a fun subverting of gender stereotypes.
Yeah, it's I think it's fantastic, but obviously they can't coexist. I just don't see them coexisting. I think that either Teddy or Dolores kills Maeve's daughter.
What?
I think that's what's going to happen, and it's just because Dolores can't get Maeve on her side. I think she's going to try again one more time because Dolores has one, you know, we've said Dolores has her vision of how it should be done. Maeve has her vision of how it's going to be done. And I think the daughter dies, gets killed by either Teddy or, and that might be the end of Teddy too, because I don't know if Teddy could handle it.
I would totally agree with that. I do think that the schism, or at least it building to a frenzy, would be over the daughter, whether she dies or whether it's Maeve finally finds the daughter and wants to escape now, but Dolores won't let her because of the bigger plan she has at hand, and maybe that results in the daughter dying or something. I know I'm putting a lot of my hands on a lot of polls tonight, but I'll put my hand on your poll as well, Jack, to say I think that might be the inciting incident.
Because, you know, it's Maeve's, like you said, it's her goal. It's the only thing she cares about. So, and Dolores cares about revenge, so we'll see what happens. And again, I'm not about killing. I know last week I joked about, you know, young Ford being killed. It's just a robot.
No, Jack, but, clearly you have a theme, and you know,
kill the kids.
all right, so that's your crackpot theory.
Oh, and I'm sticking to it.
All right. All right, well, that wraps up this episode of Westworld with J. Jack and Mike. If you'd like to give us a call at 385-309-0311.
Call Ace Hime.
Once again, it's 385-309-0311. Call any time with the questions, comments, and or theories. Send an email to WestworldJJM at
gmail.com.
Once again, it's WestworldJJM at gmail.com. Join our Facebook group at facebook.com/group/JayandJack group, where Ethan will post his favorite screen cap of the episode. Mike, I know you have seen it. Do you enjoy Ethan's screen cap?
I do. It's a little weird because I guess it's me sort of channeling Samurai World as well, considering that the shot that Ethan took was I got to go see the first two episodes of Cobra Kai, the new YouTube.
How was that? That looks like a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's premiering actually in a few days on YouTube Red. I enjoyed it to give like a brief little, I guess, review. You know, I feel like we're in a big reboot culture nowadays with mixed results. But I think what this show does really well as a reboot is that it takes these sort of timeless themes that come from 30 years ago, but really bring it into the modern era and sort of focus on these ideas of like masculinity and fatherhood and what it means to be a man in a 21st century culture and how those sort of work together, how they sort of butt up against each other. So it's also like it's a dramedy. So there's definitely comedic elements of it, particularly with you know, Johnny Lawrence's parts. But it's going to be building to something really interesting. But at the screening, they gave away these great headbands where, you know, one side was the Miyagi Dojo, the other side was Cobra Kai. And I took a picture of it. And I guess Ethan decided to grab that and put my samurai headband wearing head underneath Lee Sizemore's cowboy hat. Nice. Which is a little confusing, but I guess it's foreshadowing.
Without spoiling anyone, is there a line sweep the leg?
I think they poke fun at it a couple times. This show is also good about like definitely, you know, poking fun. They even make references to like, again, these creators are diehard Karate Kid series fans, not just one. So you'll see references to like even the next Karate Kid or like, you know, the less regarded movies. But it's done in a wink wink fashion, not so much a, hey, we're going to keep cashing in on this by having them say the exact same things over and over again. They definitely try to say, okay, this is the world that we're living in, but let's sort of play with some new rules here.
All right.
Yeah, it looks fun. And if you, I don't know if anybody saw Ralph Macchio on The Tonight Show. He still got it. He pulled a crane kick off, which is impressive. The ageless Ralph Macchio.
I was going to say he's another guy that just didn't age.
It's creepy. It's creepy. Yeah. But still, like you can check out Ethan's pictures. He's going to post it on our Facebook group at facebook.com/group/JayandJack group. If you use Amazon, use our link amazon.com/JayandJack for all of your shopping needs. And want to especially thank Tack from Tokyo, Eckhart Richter, Molly the Millennial, Ed the Letter Carrier, and Maggie the Magnificent for your patronage. And a thanks to all of our patrons. All of our podcasts are listener supported, and without your support, these shows would not be possible. Check out the other shows on our network. Survivor is in full swing, as well as is there Dancing with the Stars coming up, Jack? An all athletes edition?
It's only 4 weeks, but yes, we will be recording Dancing with the Stars.
So that's going on, and of course, broadcasts, Ramblecasts in full swing as always. You can find them all at jayandjack.com/iTunes. And Mike, you are a busy man. What's some of the stuff that's going on in your world right now?
So I'm doing some Survivor exit press for Parade, as well as a Survivor podcast, doing some RuPaul's Drag Race podcast, SNL. I stream D&D every other week on Twitch under TPK Games, as you mentioned before. So I got to do a bunch of TV screenings at the Tribeca Film Festival, and there have been articles that have sort of been released throughout. I think there's one where I got to see the most recent season of Genius, which premiered last week. Westworld, obviously. I got to see a Sweet Bitter, which is a new star show. Another one that I'll put in a big pin for you guys to put in. It's coming out on Amazon May 25th, but I think it's very much in this wheelhouse. It's called Picnic at Hanging Rock. It is based on a novel that became a really big film in 1975, but it's very much like the Leftovers emotional quality mixed with like the headiness and WTF-ness of Twin Peaks. So I got to see the premiere, got to talk with Natalie Dormer about it. It's a really, really interesting take. It's going to be a really fun show if the first episode is any consideration. Very audacious. So I'll probably, you know, once it comes around, it'll come around in 4 weeks when we're still doing this. But that's just one that's the last one I saw. So it's really sort of off the top of my head. But I had such fun getting to do that. And check out, you know, parade.com/member/Mike Bloom to get all the articles I wrote about that and everything I'm going to write moving forward.
Beautiful. Awesome.
When do you sleep?
I'm a host, Jack. People have to tell me to sleep, and then I'll do that, and then I'll wake up and do whatever people's biddings are.
Don't give Ethan any ideas.
Yes. All right. Well, that will do it for this week. We'll see you guys next week. Until then, hasta luego, and goodbye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.